Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
We're back. It's Friday night, and this is the Hour of Truth. We're in a little series here. We're talking about state sovereignty, and we're going to go on and on about this for a while, kind of tying it into the Article 5 series that we had worked on earlier, and actually this is just a continuation of it, but we're going to actually drill down to, in my mind, what Article 5 is all about, and that is regaining what the Founding Fathers intended, and that is, at the time, 13, now 50 separate states governing themselves and relying on a central co-op for only the specific things that are outside the power of an individual state to do. And those things are enumerated in the Constitution. The federal government, of course, has grown and grown and grown and grown into this monster. And it's time to put it back in the box. We were given a tool to do that, and we're going to be talking about that quite a bit. We've got a special guest, very special guest tonight, a great friend of mine, Lloyd Sloan. We've talked to him several times in the past couple of years now. He's been really a champion of the state repeal amendment for a good long time. He's well studied in it. He's a Harvard-educated man, so he knows what he's talking about. He does his study before he talks. And so we're going to go ahead and bring Lloyd on in and get this thing started. Hey, Lloyd, how you doing?
Hey, Dave, doing fine. Yeah, great to be back up north.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you spent some time down in Florida.
Yeah, that global warming's a killer down there, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Antarctica, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Middle of the summer down there. I guess they're feeling the heat of summer down there in Antarctica.
Talked to a friend of mine in Chicago this week, and the night after I called him, apparently by the night before, Chicago, Illinois was actually colder than the South Pole. So that tells you something. Yeah,
it's been a bitter cold. We had a couple of days there here earlier in the week that were just really, really cold. But it's going to be 60 this weekend, so I guess the global warming people will be coming back out now.
If they put it to a vote, I think global warming would actually win.
Yeah,
but at least this week it would have won.
What's your take on Bridgegate now? We might as well just get right into that.
Oh, Bridgegate. Oh, yeah, that's one. I think that there's probably as good a chance that Chris Christie knew that bridge was going to close as Obama, or that he didn't know, I should say, as Obama didn't know anything about those IRS abuses.
Right.
My guess is both of them had knowledge. I mean, that's what disturbs me about it. I mean, I think all things considered, as far as scandals go, this one's maybe not as important as some others. But nevertheless, shutting down a major bridge and highways, you know, at just the whim of government. I mean, it's amazing that it took this long to hold somebody accountable for something like that. And they come across like aristocrats now in the government.
Absolutely.
But it is standard for these guys at the top. Their defense is always, well, I didn't know about it. First I heard about it was on the news.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the vintage.
What a bunch of incompetent boobs, you know.
Exactly.
I didn't know my IRS was doing that. I thought it was about a videotape. I didn't know that we sold some or shipped some guns to the drug cartel. I didn't know we closed a bridge and caused major traffic problems for one of the central arteries of.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just. It wears you down, you know. I feel like the average American's wondering, what can I do about this? The whole thing's out of control. I don't know if you saw the poll this week, or not wasn't this week, but Gallup had announced 42% of the American people now call themselves independent.
I did
the
see that.
The highest
that
number has ever been. It's the highest it's ever been. Republicans are at a new low. They're at 25%, and those popular Democrats, they're at 31%. So they're just dancing in the streets, I guess. they're so popular,
right? and I think it's a good time. I think it's a good time for that, really, because you know I've been after people for years myself to leave these parties and just be independent. I shy away from capital independent as in a formal party structure. As a person who is libertarian, I shy away from the capital L Libertarian Party with all of its problems. I've been after people to become independent for a long time. I say no party is good for me.
Yeah, and I do think that's relevant to constitutional topics, you know, I mean, which is what we kind of want to – I know that's what your show focuses on at this time, so I didn't mean to distract it from
no,
that.
No, no.
But it shows you the American people are fed up. That's number one. They're fed up. They're frustrated. They don't believe in either one of these two parties anymore.
Yeah.
And that's a healthy sign so long as we can get it fixed. It could be a very bad sign if people don't – if they just grasp at any knight in shining armor who comes along, you can get a French Revolution out of this and you can get some real nastiness, down the road that doesn't solve the problem. So, and that does take us into my take on the Constitutional Convention, because I'm not afraid of a Constitutional Convention so long as we go in there thinking that we know what we want to do with it. If you just go in with wishful thinking and saying, well, let's just hope these guys come up with some great ideas. Oops. I mean, that is so naive. That's like a football team. And I didn't play football in high school, but you can imagine if they just said, well, let's just huddle up and see if we can't. Maybe we'll come up with a good play.
Right.
You better have practiced that play for a long time. You better know exactly what play you're supposed to call, and everybody better be on board, or you're going to get a disaster. You know?
I agree. And the other thing we talked about last week, aside from and we talked about what you just mentioned at length last week about being prepared, about getting together in state committees, and knowing. Before we go, what we want to talk about, we don't just get around the table and have a game of bridge and float any idea that pops up between hands. But the other thing that I'd like to see people avoid is any kind of national organization. I would like to see the organization stay. We talked with a fellow from Iowa last week on the show here who is active in a group of Iowans that are getting together doing what Missouri Liberty Amendments is doing, and that is talking at the state level, talking with their state legislatures, getting together, having rallies, deciding what they want to get out of the thing, but. As soon as you start getting into some sort of national organization, you are looking at some central figure who wants to control the whole process.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I'd rather be state-based but coordinated. I guess that's the
right way
to put it. And so, and the states are more likely to be grassroots. They're closer to
exactly.
the people. I hope that if Iowa comes up with a great idea, they share it. That's all I say.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
you know,
but they shouldn't try and control the idea necessarily.
Nope.
But it is going to take at least 26 of these states acting together to put this thing back in order. That's the way I'm looking at it, yeah. But the states are our best hope at this point. We need to focus at that level and coordinate. And then we're more powerful. This federal government is powerful as can be. I mean, they're in everybody's pocket.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
giving checks to people. They spy on everybody. I mean, let's get real here.
And they
this
own,
is a
and
massive
own,
thing.
And they own the media. They own every media outlet.
Yeah, yeah. Especially the national media. Yeah, I mean,
it is. And that's what I mean. I'm
and centralized. Yeah.
Right. I'm not talking about things like Breitbart and Blaze and things like that. But I was talking, yeah, with you about any mass
yeah.
media, any national media is totally in their pocket. It and that, you know, getting back to Bridgegate, I mean, what really disappoints me more about Bridgegate than anything else is the media. I mean, Christie's going to die for this. He's going to be absolutely crucified. The journalistic investigators are out. They're going to get one of these people to blow the whistle. One of these people who Christie's thrown under the bus.
Oh
and
yeah, yeah, I agree.
Christie's going down now. That's fine. I don't have any problem with Christie going down. Christie ought to go down. But where was that media, you know, when the president allowed the murder of four people in Benghazi? Where was that media when the president shipped arms down? You know, we've got a president who's been caught lying red-handed. Where's the damn media?
They look in the other way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, part of that's media bias because they tend to lean donkey, so, you know, that's part of what's going on. And then the other is just an incredible control at the national levels by
that's
these
right.
national government people, particularly by, let's just, by the presidency. Because Bush was able to do things, and Obama can do things. It's gotten worse throughout my lifetime. Nixon got away with stuff.
Yeah.
They're just unaccountable. And they have underlings to take the falls for them, and it just takes forever to hold them accountable. Forever.
But,
you know.
But, I mean, Nixon got impeached for a lot less than Obama's gotten away with.
Yeah. I mean, it took for a long time to get to him, but you're right.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Exactly.
I mean, Nixon was able to survive close to 2 years under that Watergate.
Oh, absolutely.
And he actually, I mean, people forget what happened, but he actually sick the CIA onto the FBI. Neither one.
That's right.
I mean, it's a clear abuse of power what he's doing when I look back on it. Nixon did not order the Watergate break-in. He simply covered it up afterwards.
Yep.
He was derelict in his duty, and his staff was out of control, the fact that they're even doing that kind of shenanigans. But they obviously felt bulletproof and immune. That on the Constitution, what I would fix here, and this is I'm not really proposing this one, but I do think a convention might be helpful here because I just don't see the clear way to go. But when we built the presidency, we probably built it too powerful initially. One, because we were used to kings, and so that was just a tradition in the United States was to have a king. And so that's what we were. We expected a unitary executive, it's called. We were one of the first to have a constitution of major countries, and we followed that model, and we trusted George Washington. So we created this very powerful unified executive and this national election for president. No one else has followed that model. I think the French are close to it. They have a very powerful president. But most of these European countries and most democracies around the world follow the British model.
Right.
And they have a parliament. They use a parliamentary system to get their executives. And so they're appointed by the legislature. Our founders chose not to do it that way. I think that needs to be looked at again. And if you want to really hold, we have this in Missouri with the governor's office, too. It's not just Christie, but in Missouri with Nixon, the governor here. mean, he essentially broke the law. The scandal related to him was the refresh my memory. It was records for the gun people, right? It was gun registration stuff.
Yep.
And he forwarded that information, the concealed carry information, to the national government. You're not supposed to do it. And it's pulling teeth trying to hold these guys accountable.
And then he stepped in with the gay tax thing. I personally don't care one way or the other, but again, you know, a clear violation of the Constitution, and the most egregious one in my mind from Nixon was the sequestering of all that money to force the legislature to not override his veto of the tax cut. A measly tax cut, didn't matter, wasn't going to make it any one of us, wasn't going to put an extra dime in any one of our pockets. But the very idea that this guy can take appropriated monies, monies appropriated by the legislature that we elected and appointed to appropriate those monies, and that he could single-handedly sequester those monies, holding back money from education and from other vital programs to get his way, it just amazes me. I mean, what an abuse.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, the change I would recommend, we could try it in Missouri. I mean, it would be interesting to talk about. But get rid of the election for governor in the state. I wouldn't miss it personally. Others might, but I don't care. And let the legislature pick the governor, and do it in a way that the whole executive branch, that the minority party could also be represented. So you get kind of a coalition government. So say, you know, if Republicans obviously now have dominant control of the legislature, so that's going to make Democrats nervous, obviously. But what you'd say is, look, the majority party can pick the governor and lieutenant governor, and then the Democrats can pick the attorney general, and blah, you know, you can do it this way so that you kind of split the government and you keep some accountability on parties and all. I'm just thinking out loud here, but I would prefer it that way, because then I know if that governor doesn't do what that legislature wants him to do, he's fired. And quickly, and you definitely have an executive that responds to the legislative branch, and then you could do other things to reform the other elections. But the most broken elections we have are the federal elections. They are just a money orgy, and the election for president is the worst monstrosity we've ever had. I realize in our history sometimes presidential elections have been very important in the history of the country, like the election of Lincoln. And arguably the FDR election in 1932 is huge. The 1912 election is huge for Wilson, et cetera. Jefferson's election in 1800 is huge. But, you know, that aside, and that's a worthy consideration, I don't mind if I don't ever vote for president again, frankly. The choices I am given are Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and a constitutional change there wouldn't break my heart. And if it made the president more accountable to the Congress, great. I'm all for it.
I'm for that. If I realize that you don't think this is as important as I do, but I think repealing the 17th Amendment is probably the second most important thing we need to get out of this convention. I'm not being a bit facetious when I tell you that I'm sold on the idea that your amendment is the one most important one we need to get out of it. But I believe that repealing the 17th, and if we could do that, then I might ride along with you on this parliamentarian selection process.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with changing this. I wouldn't put it in the way of repealing the 17th, incidentally. I'd go even further. I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but you're exactly correct that the 17th Amendment took us too far down a wrong path. It was unintended. So they wanted to make the system less corrupt. This is typical of progressives. This is how they think, right? Oh, so we'll have the people vote. And all they ended up with was plutocracy. They ended up with the money interests, again, just controlling these races for Senate, and it's actually, in my opinion, more corrupt than it ever was before. And the other thing they accomplished was the Senate is now a meaningless institution. It doesn't represent anybody.
Right.
We already vote for representatives in Congress, so it doesn't represent the state anymore. The people in the states, yes, but they were already voting for Congress. So what we need to do, what I would do on the 17th or on the Senate, is I would have each state send however many senators they want, maybe, you know, a limit of six, something like that. But the vote would be by state in the Senate. We go back to the Articles of Confederation, and we would no longer have senators voting for themselves. It would be a vote by state. So if your state sends three senators, then those senators would get together, and whatever their majority vote is, that's how your state would vote. Missouri sends five senators, votes 3-2, then Missouri votes in favor. And if it's the other way, then Missouri votes against. But Missouri gets one vote and one vote only in the Senate. The current method that we have, the problem with it is that you can actually pass something in the Senate and not, and only have one state supporting it, okay? Because the senators might be divided. Let's say the vote is 51-49, okay? So, you know, you pass by one, by two votes, or by one vote, if you will. And but it might only be one state that is actually approving of that thing, because let's say 49 states split 1-1. So each one of their senators voted both ways. Okay, so you get one state that votes 2-0, and 49 states split 1-1, and the thing passes even though one state and only one state technically approved of the thing. That's the wrong formula. So yeah, we got a problem in the Senate, in my opinion, too, that needs to be fixed. And I do think it's a good amendment. I'm not opposed to that amendment. I don't think it's good enough to solve the problem that we have now. But, yes, I'm not opposed to that amendment. And that's a much better amendment, incidentally, than, say, balanced budget or some of the other proposals I hear. We should talk about the state repeal amendment, because we talked about the ones I don't like, so we should talk about the ones that we both think is most important.
We've got some listeners, and we're going to keep them holding on here for a little while to get to that, and that's the topic of tonight's show. My co-host Kevin Harned has finally made it in. He got caught up in traffic. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing good, Dave. Yourself?
I'm good, thanks.
Lloyd's
here already, so we're going to launch into it a little bit early tonight. Maybe wrap his segment up a little early and get to the news chatter toward the last segment. But
no hurry. I mean, it's been great. I've been listening to you guys, and it's very interesting.
What's up with you? What do you think about all that stuff we talked about?
Well, I have to agree with you. I believe the 17th is very important, Dave. You know, whenever we're looking at the, especially all the functions of the Senate and as far as their oversight and the powers, or I guess mainly the oversight that they have with the recent rule changes, with everything else. I mean, it's, you know, we just had a change at the top of our financial institutions and with the 56 vote. So it's there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. But I would like to hear more about this repeal amendment, because I'm not up to snuff like you guys are on it, and I would love to be a little more informed. So I guess we'll get that way.
Well, the guy who brought me up to snuff on it, and I'm not as educated as Lloyd is. I mean, I've read everything that he's done, and I've researched it a little bit in show prep, and then my interest in it peaked, and I've researched it a little bit more after that. But the guy that knows everything about the state repeal amendment, what in my mind is the most important amendment that needs to come out of a convention of the states. And Lloyd even has a better idea, or an idea he thinks is better, on how to get this done without having to do it through the convention, I believe. And we're going to get to that right after our first break, coming up now.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. Good does not always triumph.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
I want to be ready. Yes. 347-677-1835. If you want to get in on this, you want to listen up to what's coming. 347-677-1835. We want to hear from you. Hey, before we get started here on the state repeal amendment, I want to piggyback on that last break a little bit. We had And I say this with the extension of all the gratitude that Missouri Grassroots has for those who donated last year. But we had a miserable year at Secret Santa. And I know, I don't take that personally. Missouri Grassroots Radio doesn't take that personally. Missouri Grassroots Coalition doesn't take that personally. Everybody had a bad year. I mean, even the Salvation Army is saying it's horrible. We need some after holiday cash flow to help us even maintain. That's why, folks, we drag this thing out all year. We don't wait until November and put out a bunch of red buckets at the time of year when we know it's hardest for you to give. We start trying to collect in January with our eye on the Secret Santa in December because it's easier for all of us. It's easier for us to come beg you for money throughout the year, a little bit at a time, $5, $10, but we, you know, it hurts. It hurts the pocketbook, but my gosh, we are the ones out here preaching about self-sufficiency and helping our fellow man and not needing the government. And I'm not preaching. I'm not telling you that if you don't give to Secret Santa or some like cause, you're less of a person. But I'm saying, this is where the rubber hits the road. And so if you could, I mean, if you can, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. In the top, there's a Secret Santa tab. And when you get to the Secret Santa page, click on the PayPal button and send a dollar, $3, whatever you can, a couple of bucks a month, to get us, you know, to get us in a, to a point in December where we can help more people out. We appreciate everything that everyone has done for Secret Santa, and we look forward to a successful Secret Santa in December of 2014. Okay, we're back with Lloyd and Kevin, and Lloyd, just give us a quick reminder. Some people are joining us probably for the first time with you here, and some people need a little refresher. What is the state repeal amendment? Listeners, it's 347-677-1835. Go with it, Lloyd.
Okay, state repeal amendment is, let me very briefly, it empowers a representative majority of states to be able to repeal or void or nullify or, you know, get rid of any federal law or regulation. That's it. Okay. What's a representative majority? It's a majority of states that also represent a majority of the American people. So it's a kind of special majority of states, 26 of them. And then when you add up the populations or when you add up their representatives in the House, you would get a majority there. And with the with the state repeal amendment, obviously if we had it, then we would have no Obamacare. I doubt if we'd have federal light bulb restrictions. We probably wouldn't have NSA. We probably wouldn't have a lot of things that the states would – they'd be able to go after the Federal Reserve. They'd be able to go after all sorts of unpopular things that the federal government does, and the states would be able to push back. The motivation for this is – I mean, I'll say in the broadest context, you know, why this one? Why do you focus on that one? I think – but the people who actually hate the 17th Amendment, even the people that talk about no state nullification, all these things, I think they all are working on a common problem. The problem is basically a transfer of power, arguably since the Civil War, at least, but, you know, or maybe since the New Deal, however you want to measure it, the transfer of power from states to the federal government, to the central national government. And we've watched that central government grow and grow and grow until now. When you realize that even in the state of Missouri, that over half of our revenues that we play with in the state of Missouri come from the feds. And so we've had this, you know, we've had this massive transfer of power from states to the central government, to the feds. And then everybody's trying to work on restoring federalism and get that back. This problem actually has existed from day one in the Constitution. Why? Because basically, we have a subtle, I'll say flaw, but if you will, you know, just a kind of crack in the foundation, and it centers around the question, who decides if the Constitution isn't being followed? Okay? That's a key question, right? So here we have this great Constitution, and it's supposed to limit everybody, and here's the rules, and then all of a sudden the federal government exceeds its authority, at least in some of our opinions. Who decides in the end whether or not they violated it? And the answer is we go to the Supreme Court. And so there is this bias inside the Constitution itself towards the federal government because they get to decide if it's broken. They get to they say, oh, no, we don't think we broke it. Okay, go back to sleep, everybody. And this has been going on. I mean, Jefferson and Madison noticed this early on, as early as 1798. They realized the federal government cannot be the final judge of whether or not they themselves broke the Constitution. And obviously in the Dred Scott decision, that just blew sky high. It almost forced a civil war on the country because the Supreme Court, that's their biggest botch up to date, and it's a pretty big one, so let's hope we never exceed it. But this subtle problem of letting the federal government judge its own powers needs to get fixed, and the way to fix it is to give the states acting together a way to repeal federal laws the same way that judges repeal federal laws when they do judicial review. So that is supposed to be a short answer, and that's about as short as I guess I can get.
Well, Brevity is not necessary, Lloyd. We've got an hour.
Absolutely.
We've got an hour and 23 minutes left. So let's make sure that the listeners get this. Any federal regulation, as you've pointed out, say the light bulb regulation or Obamacare, or any federal law, say the Defense of Marriage Act, could be overturned, could be nullified, could be done away with completely as though it had never existed, if 26 states representing half the population, say so. This is no longer a law.
That's correct.
And this would be an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to grant to the states the power that was intended for them to start with.
Yep.
Okay.
That's it. I mean, in theory, I believe the Constitution, without amendment, contains this power in the hands of the states if three-fourths of the states. It would take three-fourths right now to repeal. I argue, you know, that's true because three-fourths of the states can amend the Constitution anyway. So they are clearly the final word on that document since they are the only ones who can amend it. The problem is three-fourths is just too high a bar. You know, I mean, frankly, that's one of the problems in the Constitution as well. It's just hard to amend.
The other problem is that the limitation the states have with this three-fourths in Article 5 is actually amending the Constitution. They can't go in and line item veto, and you don't want to be amending the Constitution like you change underwear. You don't want to be amending the Constitution
to say
Congress can't regulate light bulbs, and now we got to make another amendment next year to say the Congress can't, you know, set exhaust standards on cars, and then you got to make another one. Yeah, you don't want to be amending the Constitution like that. So this actually is kind of a line item veto for the states.
Oh yeah, it's like judicial review is the way I think of it in the hands of the states. But yeah, line item veto that works as a model. Yeah, I mean it's very flexible, and it would be able to fine-tune, which is what's needed, because just electing a senator or two is not sufficient. Because the states will face the same problems that we do now. I mean, you put yourself in the hands of a voter in Missouri today having to choose between Claire McCaskill and Roy Blunt. Now, I realize, you know, Republicans and Democrats will be partisan on this, but the truth is both of them have violated the Constitution in their own way. And so you don't face a constitutional choice when you have to choose between McCaskill and Blunt. You can argue, well, McCaskill broke it worse than Blunt, so vote for Blunt, or, you know, vice versa if you're a Democrat. But that's not the issue. The issue is, and that certainly isn't the way the Supreme Court fixes problems that they see. When they see a constitutional problem, they just go in there and say, bang, 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 all these things are dead. And that's the power we want in the hands of the states, directly.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, just for clarity, gentlemen, you're saying that it would take both parts of that, 26 states at least, and they would have to equal over half the population?
Correct.
I believe that's the right formula.
I believe that is the right formula. You can write it up however you want. But think about it for a second. That formula, that way, it actually mirrors Congress. I mean, Congress is supposed to be, with the Senate and the House, it should represent a majority of states and a majority of the American people whenever it passes a law. In order to pass the House, it should represent a majority of the people. Whenever it passes the Senate, it should represent a majority of states. And so this does the same thing. It just does it out here in the hinterland where the people live, you know, so it lets the states, who are closer to the people, quite frankly, obviously, and there's just more of them. I believe if you add up the total number of state legislators in the United States, what do you get? You get close to, I think it's 40,000, 30,000, 40,000, is it that many? And you got 50 states, and each one has, I mean, Missouri's got close to 200, 300. So, yeah, you're up in those kind of numbers, I guess. And that's good. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing particularly when you're talking repeal, as bad as state legislatures can be, they are at least more representative of the American people than the Congress. The Congress represents some very narrow, powerful special interests, frankly, that have a control over this system. Now, typically, people on the right, the so-called right, which is where I came from, I guess, because I was raised Republican, we tend to have trouble admitting just how much control these special interests have. But believe me, over there on the left, where they play, oh, man, they really see it quickly. They hate those corporations, right? So they see nothing but corporate money in all this stuff, and they've seen it for years. So you can sell that to them pretty fast. The right, not so fast. But after the TARP bailout, yeah, I was a pretty easy sell.
So putting this in a nutshell for you listeners, if you can just close your eyes for a minute and envision a map of the United States, what Lloyd is suggesting here, look at the geographic blocks of the United States, the most powerful block being the Northeast, where the power is centralized. But you couldn't even get a geographic block in the Northeast, because you've got all the small states up there. You couldn't put 26 of those states together and get this done without. This is going to have to be not only kind of politically dispersed, but it's going to have to be geographically dispersed as well. If you'll just look at the United States in your head, there's no geographic block where you could put together 26 states and force their will on everyone else. You're going to have to go and find a populous state, Texas, California, Florida, New York. You're going to have to bring those states in.
Yeah, it's as good a formula as I can come up with. The problem with the other formulas, and incidentally, others have had a repeal amendment idea. This is not original with me. There was a repeal amendment proposed about back in 2010 by Randy Barnett. He's a law professor at Georgetown, but he used a two-thirds of states formula. And Levin, in his book, has a repeal amendment suggestion similar to this. He puts a two-year time limit on it. I think that's a mistake. I do not want a time limit on this.
Right.
Because there's no time limit on the courts, so I don't know why there should be a time limit on the states. But at any rate, he has a three-fifths of states, which is, you know, that's not the right formula either, Mark. I mean, the right formula is a representative majority, and I would insist on that because it mirrors Congress, and so everybody gets that part. Incidentally, this idea, too, it has a history going back to James Madison. I was able to find in the writings of Madison in the 1830s something similar to this in his writings. And he called for an amendment. He doesn't outline all the details. But it's clear that what he wants to do is amend the Constitution so that at least some majority of states acting together can repeal. And so he doesn't give a formula or anything, but he clearly puts the idea out there. He's a year from death at that point. He's a very old man. And, you know, the idea went nowhere, obviously. No one picked up on it. But this has a pretty good pedigree, in my opinion. Anytime you can cite Madison as a potential source here, you're on real good ground, in my opinion. So.
You know, whenever I'm looking at this, I like the consideration of both of those rules. If it was a simple majority and you didn't have to have 26 states, I wouldn't be in favor of it, but I'm intrigued by the fact that it would require both.
Yep, I'm with you, I will give you, and I will brag, that's my contribution, okay? My background is engineering and math. I'm not a lawyer, okay? So when it comes to making up good formulas, that's what I do well. When it comes to the legalese, I stole the legalese language for the amendment from Randy Barnett. So I just took his approach and changed the formula, and there's your state repeal amendment. What I'm asking the state of Missouri to do in 2014, so I'll be up there next week lobbying for this, so we're very timely, I have a petition that I would like the state legislature to pass This is not as aggressive as what Levin and some of the other amendment convention people are calling for. But I want the state of Missouri to petition Congress specifically for this amendment. And that's all. So please, Congress, propose this amendment. And then we share this petition with our other states. And it states within the resolution, if two-thirds of our fellow states all agree that this amendment should be proposed, and Congress fails to act within 6 months of that two-thirds being attained, then we will consider that grounds for an amendment convention for that purpose. So there's some teeth waiting in the background, but it's still a very controlled process, because all we're asking Congress to do is pretty please propose this amendment, okay? That's all you got to do. And I guarantee, I don't care what the amendment is, but if two-thirds of the states of this country ask Congress to merely propose an amendment and they fail to do it, pardon my French, right? But, you know, you know you got a problem at that point. They are absolutely a problem. Yeah.
Sure. Now, Lloyd, one other thing just for clarity, and maybe it was discussed and I missed it, but whenever we're talking about a state that would support this, how would we come to that conclusion? Would it be the legislature? Would it be the populace?
It's the legislature. In the language, in the amendment, it's the legislature. The legislature, of course, can choose whatever means they want. So they could technically, I guess, put it to a vote of the people. You wouldn't prevent that. But in the amendment itself, my suggestion, others can disagree, obviously, but my suggestion would be let it be the legislatures. They are the most representative bodies we have.
Okay.
So let them do it. And I don't like putting stuff like this to a vote of people, frankly. It scares me. I think this stuff still requires a deliberative process. It's kind of like, a jury isn't just about voting, but it's also about those jurors being in the same room discussing things. That's an important part. And so you can't have a jury of 1,000 people, you know, because it's not just about watching a trial and voting.
It's a little bit more than voting on America's Funniest Home Videos, right?
Correct. It's not American Idol here. Even the presidency, you know, this is insane to think that you can get all your entire participation in this democracy comes down to which dictator you want to vote for. I mean, this is not good, people. The voting is important, but other things are also important. And it's not just the yes or no vote, and that gives you freedom. You need the ability to deliberate and to formulate choices. I used to be a talk show host, too, and people would call me up on the air and just, you know, well, you're against democracy and you're not for voting. I'd say, I mean, that's not true, but let me play a game with you. So what we're going to do here, guys, there's three of us, right? So it's Kevin and Dave and Lloyd. What I'm going to do, we're going to have a society, and Kevin and Dave, you're lucky because you're going to get to vote and I don't get to vote. So you guys are going to have all the power in this new society, okay?
So we're going to vote Lloyd off the island?
Here's the thing. I get to decide what we vote on.
Oh, okay.
You guys get the vote. I don't get a vote. You got all the power, right? Because you get the vote and I don't. But I get to decide what we vote on.
All right.
Who controls that society? It ain't the people with the vote.
So you set the agenda, in other words.
The first thing you guys are going to vote on is whether or not you each want to give me $100 or $50. That's the first thing you get to vote on.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it ain't going to be happy. I'm not trying to, and then I, you know, people get mad at me because they say, well, you don't care about democracy, and you don't care about voting. That's not true. I do believe voting's important. I'm not trying to take it away. But more things are important than just some cheap vote between some donkey and elephant that, frankly, you don't, I mean, if you're honest with yourself, you didn't like either Romney or Obama. Give me a break, okay? So why are you defending that like it's the most important thing in America? It's not. what's really lost in the process is that we don't seem to be able to control what we vote on anymore. Somebody else behind the scenes seems to be doing that for us, and lo and behold, they're happy as clams, and we are sitting here wondering how the heck did we lose the power. That's the key to solving America. That's the deeper issues. I believe the stay repeal amendment. I mean, I'm with Dave. I spent a lot of time thinking about the Constitution for years, just saying this thing's in sad shape. I don't know how to fix it. And as I looked at various proposals, and there's plenty of them out there, and balanced budgets and term limits and all these other ideas that come up again and again, none of them really look like game changers to me. The state repeal amendment, you know, like it or not, it is a serious game changer, and nobody can sit there and say, you know, that wouldn't have much impact on our politics. Au contraire, if you give this power back to states to do this and they start exercising it, that is a massive transfer of power back to state levels.
Well, absolutely, and as you said to start with, I mean, there's just look at Obamacare, look at the damage Obamacare is causing, and look at the number of states that sued the federal government over Obamacare. We would not have Obamacare today if we had had something like this. I mean, it would not have survived 15 minutes after the Senate and House of Representatives passed it.
Correct. Which is also what happens. I mean, the logic then kicks in, and they realize it doesn't do us any good to pass this. All these lobbyists that just flood Washington, D.C., would go away because they would sit there and say, it doesn't do us any good to pass this legislation. The states will destroy it the very next day.
Yes.
So they're either going to come out and lobby the states. I could see that happening, except it's very difficult to do. I mean, it's very expensive. And frankly, it can come unglued on you very quickly. Most of your big corporate types, most of your Goldman Sachs types, and whoever your bugaboo is from, you know, if you hate Apple Computer or you hate Disney or whatever your hatred is of which corporation, but I guarantee you, those guys like it centralized. They prefer that the power be in Washington because they can control, they can play in Washington. They can't play out here in the state levels. It's too expensive for them. And frankly, state legislators, because I'm going to wager that all of us here in this conversation know a state legislature, a
right.
legislator. How many congressmen do you talk to, you know?
Right.
I've met them. I know they exist. I've seen them on TV. But, you know, to actually sit down in a room and have a conversation with a Missouri – with.
They're very insulated.
Yeah, very.
I mean, even if you've shaken your hand with Roy Blunt and had a conversation with him at one time, he would not recognize you by name if he saw you. Now, my state rep. I mean, if I saw him at Hardee's tomorrow, he would recognize me and know me by name.
Correct.
So, yeah, you're absolutely...
That's it. I mean, this is it. It's not rocket science. They are simply more representative of the American people. They're closer to them. They have real jobs. They have real phone numbers listed. You have access there, and the average person has it. And you know, Roy Blunt is going to answer as he must. He can't answer to the average person. It would be impossible for him to do so. It would kill him. You know, but he will answer to Monsanto. You better believe he's going to answer to them. I mean, they're paying for that senator. So, yeah, he's going to take their calls. And that's the way the system works. Nothing's going to change that, okay? Even if we go – now, you know, there's a few things. But that's true even – not just of senators. I keep beating up on Blunt. But, you know, Ann Wagner's my congresswoman. And, you know, she's going to answer to – I mean, hers is enterprise leasing, right? Because her husband's a lobbyist for them. And so, you know, but the logic is there. It's there at all these levels. And I just, you know, anyway, we all kind of know this stuff without saying it out loud.
Well, one of the things that I think is probably the most disturbing trend to me is that anymore, especially out of the presidential office, we have a selection of laws that are on the books that he may choose not to enforce, and then they enforce policy that is not law. So what is the difference between what Hugo Chavez was and what the president of the United States may be? The same with any of these countries. The one thing I found that was really, really interesting is Egypt. You know, whenever the people found out that those that they had elected into power lied to them and was not living up to what they promised, and they had their second Arab Spring, let's say, removed them from office, then to me, I think our political heads saw that as a great threat, because I don't care where we are in the country, in the world, it's almost as though if somebody garnered enough votes, then they got a free license to do whatever they want to at will. And you know, what did we do? We cut off aid from them for that action, because I believe it was a threat to how democracy is viewed throughout the world now. I mean, it's almost like a free license to call all the shots.
Yeah, I'm sure we would have been. I always thought that was hilarious whenever I'd hear, we want democracy in the Middle East. And I'll think, well, I'd like it to have it in America first if we could. You know. But I also thought to myself, be careful what you wish for, guys. You may get
right.
And you ain't going to like it when it comes. The founders clearly believed that the way to protect the Constitution was that the average person was going to do it. And if the Congress violated the Constitution, then the American people would simply kick them out, and that's how it would correct itself. And there's no doubt that part of our problem is this frustration that part of the system does not appear to be working anymore, and I agree, it's just not working the way it ought to. I believe, if you're talking about, these don't require constitutional amendments, but could be done with other reforms. And the reforms I would make would be to change from winner-take-all elections to things like cumulative voting, or a really strange idea that I really like is called direct proxy representation. That's a more interesting idea. I doubt if anybody's ever heard of that. These are democratic ways to do it, but we just never talk about these kinds of reforms. In cumulative voting, let me give you an example of cumulative voting and how that would work. Right now we have a gerrymandering problem that's partly what gives us these Congress people for life. Cumulative voting breaks that up. Instead of, we have eight Congress, House members, House representatives in Missouri, and we break our state into eight different regions, and then you vote for the one person you want depending on which region you're in. Under cumulative voting, what we would do is we'd have one statewide election, and each of us in Missouri would get eight votes, okay? And the top eight vote-getters would go to Congress every 2 years. But you can take those eight votes, and you can take them all and vote for one person. Or you can split it four and four, or you can vote for eight different people. It's your choice how you want to take your eight votes and split them up. What that does is it kills gerrymandering. It really probably kills the two-party system, at least for those elections. Because what I would do personally is I would take my eight votes and I would give it to the one person that I think is going to follow that Constitution. And if there's, so that breaks up the system. It definitely changes the dynamics. Another idea, which I wouldn't want to try in Congress, so let me use a state example instead, but it's called direct proxy representation. What that is like we have roughly 30 senators, let's say, in the state of Missouri, and I think each Senate district has about 180,000 people in it. These are ballpark numbers. I'm not, don't swear me to them, but I'll use it as an example. And so what you would do for Missouri Senate elections, just using this as an example, is I would give every single person in Missouri a Senate proxy. And you can give that proxy to any fellow citizen in Missouri. As soon as any person gets 180,000 of these proxies, they have the right to sit in the Missouri Senate. They are a senator in Missouri, okay? If you fall below that number of proxies, you're out. But as long as you maintain that threshold, you're in. So basically, you give your proxy to somebody that you trust and is going to vote your way. If they don't vote your way, you take that proxy immediately and transfer it to somebody else. And if enough people do that, they're out, immediate. This would actually change the whole nature of the way our Senate operates. Because right now, again, we have winner-take-all elections. It's done by district. In this example, that senator would be representing directly the people whose proxy he holds. So he knows who those people are. He knows how they want him to vote. Believe me, he's going to vote that way, okay? So if you send a pro-life guy in or an anti-tax guy or whatever you want, whatever your big issues are, believe me, that senator knows that, and he knows his own people. He's going to represent your interests. If he doesn't, he's gone because you're going to transfer it to somebody else. That's a weird idea, but when I've explained that to people on both the left and the right, they love it. They think, wow, yeah, that's true representation. This guy is going to represent me directly. Correct. And he knows he's, you know, he's definitely going to represent your interests at that point. Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break here, gentlemen. And when we come back, what I want to get to is Lloyd in a little bit of a wrap. Tell us where we're at with state repeal amendment. Tell us what people here listening need to do to get involved and to get into this thing and to make it happen. We're going to wrap up with Lloyd when we come back, and we're going to get your calls in, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize.
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Danger. The emergency destruct system is now activated.
With Lloyd, your last chance to talk to Lloyd Sloan is this segment here, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835, Lloyd Sloan in the studio. What a great hour, Lloyd. Remind us now where we're at in Missouri and nationally, if you know, with getting this state repeal amendment going.
Yeah, nationally, I don't know. My guess is Missouri is going to take the lead on this, so, you know, that's maybe the good news or the bad news there. What I plan to do is, what I'm doing, as I said, is pushing a petition approach to the state repeal amendment. Be doing that in the Missouri legislature this coming week. I mean, this next week here. That's probably the best way people could get involved, just if they call their state legislator, state rep, then ask them, you know, would they consider sponsoring this petition for the state repeal amendment? Have they ever heard of it, et cetera? And that's one good way to get active. There's no website yet for the SRA, which that will happen this year too. But, you know, they're welcome to contact me if they want more information. They want to, and I've got several pamphlets and brochures of it, but just no website yet. I'm obviously working, I don't know if it's obvious or not, but I'm working on a book that really was supposed to be the kickoff for this, and it's behind. It's called Constitutional Awakening, How to Fix American Federalism Using Madison's Lost Amendment Idea. And this is, the state repeal amendment is Madison's Lost Amendment Idea.
Right. Where do they get in contact with you, Lloyd?
Lloyd Sloan is the name. You can find me on Facebook. My email address is Lloyd_Sloan@Yahoo. So that's the way to do it. But if you Google Lloyd Sloan, you're going to get more than you ever wanted to know about Lloyd Sloan, I think.
That's,
it'll show up. And so that's two L's, O-Y-D,
yep.
And then Sloan, O-A-N. Yeah.
So L-L-O-Y-D, S-L-O-A-N?
Yes, and then...
And that's exactly how he's known at Facebook. If you want to friend him there and talk to him there about the state repeal amendment, don't talk to him about income tax reform. come to me for that.
I would say you can come to me for income tax because Dave and I are going to agree on that, but don't ask me for a sales tax increase because you ain't going to get it out of me, okay? That's a fact.
Harvard still can't teach some things right.
Yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, regressive taxation, they kind of beat that out of me at Harvard, strangely enough. I don't like it.
Okay, Lloyd, it's always great. And what I want to do is right now I want to get a commitment from you to come back here in, 3 or 4 weeks after you've had a chance to work with the legislature and give us a update on how it's going. You're welcome to stay for an hour or an hour and a half or two, but I at least want to touch base with you and let the listeners hear from you how things are going.
Absolutely. I would love to do that. I mean,
yeah.
This is truly, I mean, I'm a neophyte. I'm not, a lot of people listening here are as expert as I am on this aspect of things, so I'm not used to lobbying legislators. So this will be an eye-opener for me, probably, and I will share that experience gladly.
Good. You're going to go from office to office, and you're going to talk to Mike there for sure.
I mean, I don't think Jim Lemke would mind me dropping his name here, but he's really the resource, and he deserves credit. He is a former state senator, known him for years. He's well-connected in Jeff City, and he's helping me establish and find the right people and speed this up. And
good.
Senator Lemke has been an advocate for this for several years now and, you know, shares the concerns that many of us have as to the state of the Constitution, and he also believes this is one heck of a good idea, and he's going to help push it forward. So I want to give him that credit, too, while we're talking. And he's
good.
The expert on
good.
This more than I am. Yeah.
On not on the state repeal amendment, but on how to
no,
get
but just
how,
on the
how
process
think,
itself.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, he knows his way around Jeff City, okay? I know all my state capitals. That's what I know. I remember those from like third or fourth grade. So I'm pretty good on that, actually. More than most Americans, I have retained that knowledge.
Yeah.
But if you're asking me how you get a bill passed in the Missouri House, I have no idea who calls those shots.
But, I'm going to put a plug in here for ourselves. If you folks want to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the MGC radio page, go back and you'll see the breakdown there on the MGC radio page. If you'll go back, there's a very interesting two-part series that I – just two-part. I don't want to call it a series, but a two-part show that I did, 4 hours, 2 hours on two different nights, where we talked to Carl Bearden, and we actually did the Schoolhouse Rock thing on walking a bill through the Missouri through both houses in Jefferson City, and how it gets amended, and how a bill to let people keep their firearms turns into an albatross that doesn't have a prayer of flying. Lloyd, we're going.
I should echo that. Carl Bearden is another good name that I've run across, and he. I mean, I'll put in a plug for David Court here, too, because, I've taken this idea and mentioned it to a lot of people, hundreds, in the past several years as it's been formulating. And on about one out of every 10 or 12 will immediately grasp the importance of this idea. And you're one of them, Dave. I mean, you immediately said, this has promise. This is a big idea. And I totally agree with you. I mean, that was my reaction when I kind of stumbled across it, too, and thinking, yeah, this is big. This can change the game. Yeah.
Oh, it can. It can, absolutely. And I think, and I'll repeat over and over, whether Lloyd's here or not, this is one of the most important things we need to be thinking about when it comes to changing. And I'm going to stick with the second most important myself, but it is right up there in the top of things that has got to be done in my mind. Okay, Lloyd, we're going to send you off to the Capitol. Say hi to my buddy Eric Burleson and my buddy Mike Moon while you're there. Tell them Dave said hi, and I'll be in touch with you one-on-one, and we'll make a time to get you back here in the next 3 or 4 weeks and let us know how things are going. And then periodically after that, I mean, this is something I definitely want to keep up on. I want the listeners out here to get on the phone this week and maybe even next week after Lloyd has introduced the idea in Jefferson City with their state legislator, with their representative, with their senator, and say, I know Lloyd's been up, they're working this thing, and let me know what you intend to do about it. So it's all up to you folks now to keep the fire under your state legislator and make at least this part of this happen. Real quick, Lloyd, before you go, recap mm-hmm. us on what you are asking the legislature to do specifically.
I have a petition wording. It has not been filed yet, but I'm asking the legislature to support. I wish I had a bill number for you. I don't. But I will by, 3 weeks from now. I'm asking the legislature to petition Congress specifically for the state repeal amendment, to then share that petition with fellow states and to make clear to Congress that if two-thirds of our fellow states join us in this petition and Congress fails to act, we will call for an amendment convention. We will consider that grounds for an amendment convention.
Okay.
So, and I hope people, I know it's discouraging and I know these ideas are abstract, but my other advice to people is these are unique times. Frankly, this Constitution has been having problems, not just because Barack Obama got elected president. We've been on a bad trend on the Constitution since at least the New Deal, and arguably even since the Federal Reserve Act and other things, in the progressive era, okay? For the first time in our history, in my lifetime, we're actually talking about the Constitution again and taking it seriously. And believe me, there's not a single problem in this Constitution we can't fix. So I'm actually encouraged by these kinds of discussions. Bear in mind that you can't just throw 20 amendments out there. You're going to have to do the hard work of prioritizing. I mean, the most amendments we've ever passed at once was the Bill of Rights. Now, we passed 10 amendments right out of the box. The founders did that. And after the Bill of Rights, Lincoln managed to get 3 done, and that took a civil war, okay? So don't go thinking that you're going to pass all 11 of Mark Levin's amendments. That's not going to happen. But if we will prioritize and say, here's the top 2 or 3, I think we got a chance to fix this thing and really get this house back in order. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why I continue to stress, people, that that this is one of the three. This is one of the two or three that Lloyd is talking about that we need to make sure. We need to ride this wave all the way to the shore. Thanks, Lloyd. It's always great. I'm going to have you back. I'm going to talk about this particular amendment on every show from now until at least Missouri passes this resolution. Whatever we can do for you here at the Hour of Truth, whatever I can do for you, whatever Missouri Grassroots Coalition can do for you, you let us know. You've got my email, you've got my phone, so please stay in touch. We want to do what we can, and we appreciate all your hard work, and we're really with you on this one.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Thanks, Lloyd. All right, what a guy. Hey, Kevin?
Yeah, very interesting. I tell you what, he's certainly not afraid to think outside of the box, and I feel like he's intellectually honest. That's a good combination.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is.
Some of the ideas, I mean, you know, I'm always leery of unintended consequences, so I'd like to digest some of it a little bit more, but it's not that it hasn't been well thought out on his behalf.
I like it. I like, you know, and I like the Lloyd Sloan addition to the proposal. I like the 26 states with the majority of the population, you know, because you go ahead.
I don't think I would support it otherwise.
Oh yeah. No, I don't, like he said, you know, 3/4 is too much. And just half the states is too little, in my mind, because you could have, several smaller states pushing everyone around, or you could have 26 progressive states or 26 conservative states get together and without a representative population force their will on everyone else.
Yes.
Although I like the idea. Here's the main idea that I like. I like the idea that we think about things now in terms of repealing bad shit, you know? Instead of making new stuff. I would be loath to give 26 states representing half the population the power to just wake up one morning and say, we need a new law. And push something like that through, but as long as we continue to talk about just and that's why I say, Kevin, that the 17th repealing the 17th is important, because when you give the Senate back to the states, yes, you do not over the will of the people. The majority of the people, which, as Lloyd quite aptly pointed out, is the other half of the legislature. That's the half that you and me and the average guy on the street owns. So you don't have the states over the will of the majority of the people able to push things through. But like Obamacare, for example, even if the majority of the Nancy Pelosi's decide they want some, you have the power with just one house representing the states directly. You have the power to stop bad shit. You might not have the power to push everything through that you want to get done, and you shouldn't, but you have the power with one house to stop bad stuff.
Right. And a lot of people bemoan that. I actually, you know, well, I'm sorry, but whenever both government entities, the Senate and the House, are in agreement to try to rush something through, the first thing I want to do is grab my ankles.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's seldom good. You need that debate. You need, you know, honestly, it's usually whenever those two are in agreement, it's not good. The people usually take it.
That's right. And you know, a good friend, and I diverge here a bit, but you know, and Lloyd mentioned this once when he talked about the need for dialogue, the need for why we don't have just an open vote for everything, the need for discourse, for reasoned debate. I hear a very and you know, I thought when I first heard this is a great idea, that you know, senators and representatives should be forced to stay home in their district and use teleconferencing to do their voting and things like that. But I, as much appeal as that has to it, as much popular draw as an idea like that has to it, I think you've got to have that chamber where there is reasoned and controlled debate, honest debate about topics before you go start making laws.
I agree. One of the other things, Dave, that bothers me, the way the whole vote process goes, is the fact that I don't like how we already know all the tallies beforehand, and I can vote for something just to give me cover. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
I hate that aspect of it because it really just muddies the water on so many fronts.
It does.
It
does.
What good is an opposition vote whenever you know it's going to pass just so you can say you made the opposition vote?
Well, that's like that. Like that cloture vote of Roy Blunt's. I mean, Roy Blunt. You can say Roy Blunt voted for funding Obamacare. You can say that. Now, Roy Blunt can come back and say, "Here's the page on the congressional record right here. I voted against it, but
right.
It took 60 votes." To even get that thing out on the floor.
Right.
It could have been stopped
right there
with Roy Blunt voting the other way. It could have been stopped dead in its tracks with Roy Blunt voting the other way to not even let that thing get out on the floor.
It's very deceptive.
So it is. It's very, very, very deceptive. And then you get on over into the House of Representatives, where Billy Long just recently scored big points for voting against. Was it NDAA or was it, you know, when you know damned good and well that Billy Long had permission from the leader of the House of Representatives, who, by the way, pushed this thing through. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was this Ryan budget deal. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was this Ryan budget deal that Billy Long voted against. Unfortunately, his side lost and the thing went through. But you know darn good and well that there are some legislators who go to Boehner and say, hey, you know, I'm in some trouble. I'm in some trouble
right.
at home. And, you've got 12 more votes than you need. Can I vote against this one? And they get the green light to vote against it because they know it's going to pass. You know darn good and well that if Boehner had needed Billy Long's vote to make that thing pass, he'd have had it.
Right.
And that's the whole thing is just so corrupt and muddied and disappointing. It's I said, I'll tell you what, when that whole thing about the Ryan thing came up, there's only one question in my mind that you need to ask a member of the United States House of Representatives who is looking for your vote to return to Washington, D.C. One question, and that question is, who did you vote for Speaker of the House?
Yeah.
You know, because before this session started, we all knew what Boehner was.
Oh, absolutely. I've never been a fan.
Nope. And
I hate to say it, Dave, but whenever he was being interviewed, and I think it might have been 60 Minutes or 2020, and he was weeping whenever he was talking about how he started out sweeping the floors. And you know, to me, that whole thing just set a bad tone because it just showed a sense of just him assuming the power of that particular office. And he was weeping for himself. And I knew what we had coming.
Yep. Well,
he wasn't weeping for others like he should have been.
Right.
He was weeping for his own accomplishments.
I mean, last session, We saw the debt ceiling hike. We saw the NDAA. We saw a TARP. We saw the bailouts. These were all Boehner led, and so to say, as this new term starts with all that in the past, that that he deserved your vote as leader of the House majority. No, you know, that's the only question I've got to ask you before I decide whether or not to vote to return you to Washington, D.C.
You know what? That's a good point. I would have to say if it came down to just one, I would have to put that very high. They also, you know, if you look at how he, I guess, strong-handed many of those that were trying to stand on certain principles.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a crying shame.
Kicked people off of committees and took their power away just for speaking out or just for standing up for what was right and what they believed in. We're going to take a break, Kevin and I. We got a little topsy-turvy show here. We had Lloyd on a little earlier than we usually do our guests, and that's fine. It was a great conversation. We're going to take our last break, and we're going to come back. Kevin and I are going to bat the news around a little bit.
I've got a feeling that the tide is
life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
They told me that you had gone totally insane, and that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any methods.
I don't see any method at all, sir. Okay. We'll be back tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we've got another special guest, and I'm looking forward to that. Mike Moon. Mike Moon is a Missouri House of Representatives member who represented us, you and me, in the state of Missouri at the Convention of the States meeting here just recently up at Mount Vernon. Not Mount Vernon, Missouri, the real, original Mount Vernon, home of George Washington himself. They had a meeting there and just kind of laid the groundwork for Convention of the States. We're going to talk to Mike. We're going to kind of see what went on there and what the future is for that. And I'm lining up now some great guests for next week, too. So that's Friday night and Saturday night, the Hour of Truth, Dave and Kevin, whenever he can come along. And then stay with Missouri Grassroots Radio, because on Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis comes along. You know Cynthia, don't you, Kevin?
Absolutely. Sure.
Cynthia will be along. Cynthia is got a little debate going on over there about the Convention of the States. She's got some pros and some cons. And, you know, over here on the Hour of Truth, where we only talk about what's real, we don't talk to the cons. We just talk to the pros. So,
the orange jumpsuits?
That's right. We don't buy off at all on the runaway convention, and we don't buy off at all on the progressive scare tactics that try to keep you from getting behind the method that was given by us to us by the founders for fixing this mess that we're in. And then on Wednesday night, hang on, because it's Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, with everything you need to know about living and maintaining the conservative culture. What a ball of fire you get on Wednesday nights. Some great guests, some candid talk, and now that the legislative session has started, Tom Martz with the Yankee Doodle legislation segment. So that's Missouri Grassroots Radio, Friday and Saturday, the Hour of Truth, Dave and Kevin. Tuesday night, Cynthia. Wednesday night, Lisa. We're going to try to talk Kevin into taking his own show back maybe on Monday or Thursday. We are going to fill those Monday-Thursday slots here pretty soon and have you something every night. So don't forget about the Secret Santa, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. At the top in the menu of the Secret Santa button, go to the Secret Santa page and click on PayPal, send a buck or two on and off throughout the year. At the end of the week, it's payday. You look in your pocket and you say, oh, my gosh, there's an extra $4. I think I'll send that to the Secret Santa. Great. We had a low funded year this year, but I want everybody to understand we did still spend all the money we had, and a little bit more, on one worthy cause. So every dime that you send to Secret Santa is going straight to Christmas for some kid, not for some adult, that's what allows us to not care about the politics of the recipient. That's what allows us to not care about why the circumstances are what they are. This is going to children who deserve something at Christmas.
Awesome points.
Yeah. Kevin, what's happening in the news, buddy?
Well, a couple of things, Dave. First and foremost, I kind of wanted an update from you on the fair tax situation. Exactly what kind of chatter's going on. I haven't heard too much about any kind of tax reform lately. It seems like there's other things that are being proposed and pushed, other than just conservative principles as far as trying to handle the taxation, handle regulation, handle limiting the size of government, those kind of conservative principles. I haven't heard much on those fronts, not as much as we should lately, just other more agenda-driven
There continues items. To be, in my mind, either confusion or subterfuge. I continue to get emails from fairtax.org that quote a powerful senator who is writing them emails saying that fair tax is scheduled a hearing in House Ways and Means this year. I continue to call House Ways and Means and be told by House Ways and Means that they don't know anything about it. I continue to call the well-placed legislator who we're going to be reading those emails here in the near future if we don't get something, and saying, where are you getting this information without any callbacks, from his office? So we're going to continue working on that. The fact of the matter is that the organization keeps moving. I believe that there is repeal of 16 and an amendment to institute the fair tax is, in my mind, another one of those three or four that has to come out of this. A balanced budget amendment would be nice, okay. A term limits would be nice, okay. But give me the state repeal amendment. Give me repeal of 16 and a fair tax, and give me a repeal of 17 and a return of the Senate back to the control of the states, and I think 99% of all the problems go away, with or without term limits, with or without a balanced budget, with or you give me a fair tax, you give me the state control of the Senate, and you give me a state repeal amendment, and I think you've got it whipped.
Yeah, I think we could stop hiding behind, you know, so-called reforms whenever it comes to whether it be lobbyists or anything else, if we're able to accomplish those feats. Whenever we're looking at the big debate on the fair tax, flat tax, everything else, you know, if we're looking at the Ways and Means Committee to implement this, it ain't going to happen.
No.
That's just,
no.
I mean, it's just there's no way in heck that member, that body is going to give up the most power, arguably the most powerful body in the world. You know,
right.
It's just, it's not going to give it up. It's what it's all about whenever it gets to that level. The things that, to me, I see a lot of them that have started to jump on the tax reform wagon, really jump on the flat tax side of things. And Dave, you know I'm big in what I believe is human nature, just the natural course that we're going to go down if we're allowed to just let it continue. And if we think of the income tax that started out as a flat 4% and see the monstrosity that it's built to today, we're not going to fix anything by doing that. We may make it better for a while, but human nature is going to take us right down that same course, because whenever the federal government offers people write-offs, they will willingly take it. And we're going to be in the same monstrosity. They're not going to – go ahead, I'm sorry.
No.
No, please. That's all right. Go ahead.
And that is exactly, in my mind, why, you know, I mean, we start off talking about the fair tax by talking about why the income tax and the property tax, for that matter, is in and of itself an evil and insidious tax. And that is – any tax on income and any tax on property is the government's handle to need to know what property you have and what your income is.
Very valid. Absolutely.
I mean, that is the evil of taxing income. That is the evil of taxing property. It is none of the government or my neighbor's damn business how much I make or what I have. The only way they make it their business is by making that a basis of taxation.
That's very, very valid. One of the other things that I'd like to see changed is the access that the government has to seizure on so many different levels. You know, if we look at it, why should a government entity be given more authority and power to handle financial matters than an individual? In other words, Dave, if I do work for you in your house and you don't pay me, I can't just seize your house. You know, there's other legal processes. I could take you to court. I could put a lien against your property, other things. My whole point is, you know, if a taxing authority wants to put a lien against a property and wait for the funds, to me that's a different story than just taking it.
Yes.
And just seizing it. I mean,
and without a trial, without any due process at all, the IRS can come in and lock your bank account tomorrow, lock the front door of your house tomorrow with no due process.
No due process. And you know what? If they find that they are in error later, guess what? You're just out.
That's right.
I remember one time a children's clothing store, it was just a mom-and-pop organization, but they had actually gotten to the point that they had three different locations. And when the IRS came in and padlocked everything and audited them, and it took over a month to get through everything, they didn't owe practically anything, but yes,
they were out of business.
That single act took them out. And
that's, right.
and that's just it's not right on so many levels. Whenever we see, you know, what's going on with the IRS, whenever we see what's going on, you know, even with traffic and bridges and anything and everything, you know, there needs to be protections for the people against tyranny, and that's what we're dealing with at all types of levels.
Yep.
So it's to me, it's the only way that I can see, if we're looking at true reform whenever it comes to campaign finance or anything else, so much of that changes on a pin whenever we start talking about the fair tax. Because, again, you know, we're not catering to the Ways and Means Committee and padding these guys and these ladies' pockets and catering to them. Promising them anything down the road or anything else, if I'm a window manufacturer and I want everybody to get a rebate for putting in replacement windows, you know, it's not that they're not going to be able to do that.
And the other thing
in that situation,
yes. The other thing that you mentioned about the flat tax versus fair tax that I wanted to key in on, as long as we've got people glued to the fair tax for just a moment, is you said something about, you know, write-offs, and write-offs just keep increasing and write-offs just keep increasing. The other beauty of the fair tax, of course, is the prebate. And the prebate is, for you folks that haven't been following us on the fair tax show, everybody, and I say everybody, regardless of means, gets rebated the amount of tax that they pay for essentials. That is, the amount of tax you pay on money you spend up to the poverty level, you get that tax back. Why? Why? First of all, why does everybody get, why does Bill Gates get it back as well as the single? Well, because the tax is fair. I realize that if you're a progressive, you don't think it's fair that everyone is treated the same, but in fact, that would be the definition of the word fair, not whatever makes me feel good. But the other important part about this prebate is that what that does is it allows everyone in the country to buy the essentials, to pay the rent, to buy the groceries, to buy the gas to get back and forth to work free of tax, because that tax that you pay for those things is rebated to you every month, in real time. In fact, it's prebated to you. But what that does away with, Kevin, is exactly what you talked about, because the more progressive solution would be, well, let's just exempt food. Well, let's just exempt this. Well, let's just exempt medicine. Well, let's just exempt the visit to the doctor. And just like write-offs, Kevin, as soon as you start writing an exemption for anything, you've got the lobbyists lined up there. Well, you know, if people got to have food, they got to have a refrigerator. If they've got to have a refrigerator, they've got to have electricity. If they've got to have electricity, they've got to, you know, and pretty soon the whole, you know, everything that the average family uses is exempt from tax.
Right. And the other aspect of that, too, Dave, is whenever we look at that, we are going to control the buying patterns of the general public. So, you know, that the tax code should never dictate personal choice whenever
right.
it comes to purchases.
And
right. and that's exactly what they do so often. Is they try to direct the buying power, the buying patterns of the American people, and that's not the intent of a tax code, nor should it be.
Right.
And,
okay.
And what you're talking about is not going to do that.
Yep.
When we look at the fair tax.
So with 15 minutes left, Kevin, you said two things. You said, I have two things. When I said, what's in the news, Kevin, you said, I have two things. We talked about the fair tax. What's thing number two?
Okay. Well, the other thing would happen to be our Missouri senators and, you know, the opposing views that they had on extending unemployment benefits.
All right.
This is often kicked around. You know, it's kind of – I find it interesting that I just heard it proposed earlier on the St. Louis News as the president taking a stance on poverty and promoting these programs and these extensions, and the Republicans trying to push for cuts. Now, you know, McCaskill, of course, supported extending the unemployment benefits. Blunt had an opposing view. But whenever we look at, I think that unemployment is one of the things that is greatly misunderstood, and unemployment insurance and unemployment benefits. And what I would like to maybe do is get a business owner on sometime, maybe a guest. Maybe we could get Dave MacArthur from MacArthur's
sure.
Bakery or
yeah.
or somebody else on to talk about how these extensions affect their business directly. This isn't just the government just pulling a rabbit out of a hat. These are passed along to businesses as extra expenses. They will get a bill for this extension. You know, so many times it's just like a tax out of thin air. It's another tax that is just levied on small businesses, and the government, of course, is happy to take credit for extending these people's benefits. In the meantime, laying half the burden upon small businesses who are already overextended.
Yeah, let's line up Dave for one of our nights next week.
That would be great.
Yeah,
yeah, I it's been a while since I contacted him, but I'll be more than happy to see if he's got the time to jump on with us for a while.
Yep.
I've had discussions
right.
with him before, tensions, and you know, all of a sudden, bang, he's hit with another $6,000 bill.
Whether or not,
right.
He is responsible for unemploying anyone.
Absolutely, and the point was is that he hadn't. Unemployed. I mean, he had laid no one off
yeah.
in those particular times, and all of a sudden he's given another bill.
Yep.
So and no voice to hardly in opposition. It's just, you know, levied on him from our legislatures. So it's the unknowns, I believe, of those extensions and other things that I think would be an interesting topic.
And the Republicans, if you've been following the extension of unemployment, the Republicans, in their great wisdom, made an amendment. Well, I don't believe it passed. Well, it didn't pass, but proposed an amendment to the bill that would have made it palatable for them, and that amendment was that there's going to be as part of the cost offset, any employer who would employ someone, did you read about this, who had been unemployed for 27 weeks or more, that worker would be exempted from having to be covered under Obamacare.
I see. You know, and again, you had hit on something earlier, Dave, whenever you mentioned the fact that you really appreciate the idea of repealing things instead of just creating new crappy
right.
law to address previously written crappy law. And I am so on the same page with you on that. And these palatable solutions are so often, you know, not intellectually honest or just more makeup on something that is already not a good idea or a crappy piece of legislation.
More lipstick on the pig, to borrow a progressive to borrow a progressive campaign slogan.
You know what? Sometimes it fits, and
yeah.
And I think this would be the case. So, and I would like to say one thing to fellow Missourians, and that is. You know, to me, I honestly feel like whenever we have a party in power that we favor or what we believe is either a conservative mindset or a liberal mindset as commonly thought of, you know, I believe there needs to be more diligence on our part of holding them culpable are holding them responsible for their actions or inactions. I don't believe that we should ever support bad legislation because we like who is going to be in control of it, nor should we oppose good legislation because we don't like who's in charge of it. And I feel like that's a tendency so often in this two-party system that we live under.
Absolutely. You know, it's like, I guess NDAA and the Patriot Act sounded like a good idea when George Bush was in office, but not so good now.
Right. Very, very, very true. And it applies to so many levels. Even on the local level, we're starting to see a whole lot more restrictions placed upon unincorporated Missouri. And that is something that I would encourage everybody to really pay attention to their local county councils, to some of these other entities that are functioning, right under our noses, but nobody's paying any attention, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've got to talk to, speaking of that, I want to talk to Lisa and Cynthia. One of them, I'm sure, and it doesn't fit into our genre hardly, but one of them, I'm sure, is going to kick up something special on the city-county merger here pretty soon, and I want to make sure our listeners get turned on to that when it happens. So that's right up their ballywhack, and I'm going to get in touch with them, and we'll keep the listeners posted on when something's coming up on that. But I would expect that that's going to be there in the very near future. All right.
One thing you can always count on with Lisa and Cynthia is they both are hard workers.
Oh, and
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
They get out and beat the bushes.
Unlike me and Kevin, to some extent, who are just a long, boring, boring guys to listen to for very long, they're always entertaining. Listen, it's time for the altar call, folks. Get your pencil and paper out because in the next 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to be adding to this list. But the thing you want to be calling your state legislators about this week is the state repeal amendment. Lloyd Sloan, you heard him tonight. He's going to be up there this week working with Jim Lemke, lobbying your representative and your senator to get this thing moving in the state of Missouri. We want you to contact your state legislator. If you don't know how to do that, go to House. You got your pencil and paper out. Go to house.mo.gov. and senate.mo.gov, and there's a list there of senators. If you don't know who your senator is, pull down the list and find your senator. There's a map there of what district you live in. If you don't know, shame on you, first off, and second off, find out from the map. You can use that site to email your legislator. Legislators do read emails. I've heard legislators say if we get five or ten emails, we know we better be thinking about something. So listen, a couple of hundred, a couple of thousand emails on this thing. There's also a phone number there that you can use to call your legislator. They're in session now. They're in Jefferson City, so it's time. So put that on your list of things that we're going to be adding to here in the next couple of weeks as we talk to Mike Moon, as we talk to Dave McCarthy, and as we talk to various people on this issue of state sovereignty. We'll be back tomorrow night with Mike Moon, Tuesday night Cynthia Davis, and Wednesday night Lisa Payne Nager. Kevin and I will be back next Friday and Saturday with more excitement, more news busting, and more great guests on the issue of state sovereignty. Do it. Get involved. Make the calls. Make the emails. It doesn't cost you a thing. And Kevin, thanks for dropping in. We always love sharing time with you on Friday and Saturday night.
Well, thanks, Dave. Right back at you. And it was great to hear, like I said, Lloyd thinking outside the box on so many different fronts. It's always interesting. It gave me a lot to digest this week.
Yeah. So, it's the hour of truth. It's Dave and Kevin. If you want to know the truth, this is where you come.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.